see. They never wanted me. The curse is laid upon my race. Useless serpents, they bring disgrace. A man without a face. Time they pass again. It's so hard to tell where and when. Yeah, just do the best you can. The flames will burn away the waste. All the lies that they told erased. A man without face. A man without a 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 face.
Welcome, dear ladies and gentlemen, to the Rabbit Hole Radio Show with your host, David James. Welcome, kinsmen and kinswomen. Welcome to the nightmare of this world. You know, it's crazy. Welcome to hell. the world is like a hellish nightmare, it really is. It wasn't really, shouldn't have been really like this. If we just would have just obeyed, everything would have been a lot better. But what are you going to do? People just don't want to obey. They love rebels. You ever notice that they're all into being rebels? And you had the big movie with James Dean, The Rebel Without a Cause, you know. They taught us through their media how to rebel against our family, against the Father in heaven, and against our common sense and the law that's within us, that the Father placed within us. It's very interesting to watch this all go on. Me and Miss Elke were out there taking a walk today, and it was really nice out. Very nice day. The trees are budding. I mean, they were really, the buds are pretty big on them already. It's amazing how quick these things can happen. But it's wonderful to go out and enjoy a walk and thinking and, you know, that type of thing. And Miss Elke, she's always on alert when she's out. Her ears are up when she's out. When she goes outside, her ears go up and the hunter or huntress engages. It's very amusing to watch. She just jumps way up in the air and comes way down, you know, right off the ground, right down. She's hunting something down. Well, I put out a word of the Most High again today before this show here. And it was on Galatians chapter 2. And I think you'll find that quite interesting. Anyway, we're on page 2. What are we on? 254. On Maurice Pinet's The Plot Against the Church. Amazing. This book has really shown a lot of history in Rome and has shown the patterns of the Jews. Really interesting to see all this happening. So, let's continue from where we were and see what we'll find out this week. One way of solving such a tremendous problem seemed to be that of eliminating the unwholesome sect of Jewry by converting them to the Christian faith. As a result of their ceasing to be Jews and joining the people in whose lands they lived by incorporation into the Catholic region, not only would that strange fifth column disappear, which represents a danger for every nation, but the salvation of their souls would also be attained by faith in our divine Redeemer. Oh, but it won't. It certainly won't. Because, as I said before, Jesus knew not to convert. Yeshua knew not to convert these people. That's why he didn't waste his time. You know, he spoke in parables so they wouldn't understand. And I'm sure that some other people in our own race were not to understand either. I'm sure of it. But there was at least a hope that they would understand, you know? So these were the same motives, the book goes on, that inspired the no less Christian Byzantine emperor Basil I, the Macedonian, 867 to 885, when he compelled the Jews to accept the waters of baptism, offering those who agreed to this demand all kinds of honor and tax exemptions. Really? Unfortunately, all these measures failed, since the Jews, as the Jew historian Cecil Roth assures us, only feigned the conversions, in order in secret to continue to adhere to the Jewish so-called religion. Because of this, the contingent of the fifth column within the bosom of the church was vastly augmented. The Jewish Encyclopedia says that with the conversion carried out in the times of the Emperor Basil, I don't know if they say Basil or Basil. I suppose it's Basil. But it's funny, I just wanted to mention this to you. I watched this older Italian lady, Italian grandma on YouTube, cooking the great Italian meals, and she calls basil basilica, which is very interesting because, you know, the basilica at the in the Roman Empire there is everything to do with the serpent. But basil is a very nice, sweet, good-tasting herb, and it's good for you. But it's funny that she calls it basilica. Maybe that's what it's about. Maybe this has to do with the Emperor Basil or Basil. More than 1,000 communities saw themselves compelled to accept baptism. However, after the death of the emperor, they returned to their primitive religion. Let me stop right there. Where do we always see that? With the blacks, right? We go in, we help them, we put in, you know, modern toilets and help them medically and all this kind of stuff. We leave them, and boom, they return to their primitive religion. You see? You see why I say that they are probably of the seed line of Cain, that Cain mixed with them too? Because these are not created. These, I can't positively say that about the blacks, but it just because they always revert back to what they originally were, it shows me that they're not progressing as a race in the sense. In other words, they're stuck in, you know, in neutral. And they can never really move forward. And that's how the Jews really are. If we let the Jews go back to their own thing, they'd be back to smelling like urine and feces and all kinds of things. So isn't it interesting that it's, you know, they call it religion, but really this is a, this is not anything. It's multiple gods. It's, you know, all the, I've told you what the Talmud consists of. So let's continue. The conversion of the Jews in the Visigoth kingdom, which was carried out at the time of Sisebutus, to a massive extent, provided no better results. The Jew Cecil Roth says, quote, "The notorious infidelity of the newly converted, as well as their descendants, continued to form, up to the Arab attack in the year 711, one of the greatest problems of Visigoth policy." Interesting. We have a little place. I don't see it around where I am, but where I used to be, 7-Eleven is a store. I wonder what that means. It's also very interesting that 7 and 11 is 18, 666, so a 7 plus 1 plus 1 is 9. I'm not going to get all into that, but it's very interesting. So is that what it's all about? "All measures were also in vain, which were introduced against the unfaithfulness of those converted from Judaism and their descendants. Naturally, these false Christians were subjected to a strict attention on the part of the government offices, which as the same Jewish historian assures us, went so far as to separate those suspect from their sons, so as to bring the latter up in an unpoisoned Christian atmosphere. As soon as the watchfulness of the government was relaxed, the recently converted seized the opportunity to return to their original belief." Roth ends, and Roth means red. Roth ends these observations by concluding that all these occurrences initiated the Marano tradition on the Iberian Peninsula, that's Spain. In other words, the tradition of clandestine Jewry in Christian dress, or wolves in sheep's clothing. You dig? Because that's what it really is, ladies and gentlemen. You know, what happens is these wolves dress as sheep. And what they do is they marry in with the indigenous people of any nation until they look like those sheep, act like those sheep in every way, and pretty soon they've fooled the indigenous people into thinking that they are them. Wolves in sheep's clothing, you see? The popes and many Christian kings were alarmed by these insincere converts who were on the point of overwhelming the church, and therefore introduced various measures in order to prevent and prohibit Jews from being forcefully converted. Among others, we can quote those which the Jewish Castilian Encyclopedia, refers to, which says the following in this connection. Leo VI, the philosopher, Byzantine emperor, son of Basil, reestablished religious freedom for the purpose of preventing the appearance of false Christians. Pope St. Gregory recognized this problem in all its magnitude, as well as the extraordinary danger that false converts represented for the Holy Church. He therefore passed a definite prohibition of the persecution of the Jews and of compelling them to become converted in any kind of form. The bishops, now I don't know which pope this is, he would have said it just must be Gregory, because we know that two of the Gregories, the 6th and 7th, were Jews. I wonder if they would admit that in this book. We'll find out, I assume. The bishops followed these instructions and opposed everything that might signify a compulsory conversion of the Jews, albeit reducing the latter to powerlessness, so that they could not infiltrate and poison Christian society. The Jewish historian Gretz makes an interesting commentary in connection with these measures. And here's the comment. "But the tolerance even of the most liberal bishops had no great significance. They merely abstained from any proselytism that involved threats of banishment or death, because they were convinced that by these means the church would be populated with false Christians who would curse it in their innermost heart. But they did not hesitate to chain and harass the Jews, nor to place them on the same level as slaves on the social ladder. This kind of behavior appeared completely justified and pious to almost all representatives of Christianity during the centuries of barbarism. But also, we know that they're the most subtle beast of the field, so they always were really that. Here the Jewish historian summarizes one of the aspects of the new policy that several popes of the church were to pursue during the Middle Ages. Convinced of the fact that it was dangerous to compel the Jews to conversion by means of persecution or threats, they strove to prevent such enforced conversions. They even declared it as anti-canonical. At the same time, they undertook energetic measures against the false converts and their descendants. The false Judaizing Christians, very interesting, huh? Some popes and kings permitted to the Jews to practice their religion openly, treating them tolerantly and even granting them protection against unjust attacks. But this kind of new policy also failed against the malice and perfidy of Jewry, which, far from thanking the goodness of such popes, did not hesitate to exploit this leniency in order to plan and prepare every kind of conspiracy against the church and the state. This stiff-neckedness soon forced the popes to alter their policy and try to prevent the unleashed Jewish beasts from devastating everything. Thus, they attempted to enchain the latter anew, so that the Jews could cause no further harm. This is the true explanation of which might seem to be a contradictory policy with respect to Jews, which the various popes have carried out. It is therefore understandable that it was revealed that the measures of tolerance towards the foe revealed catastrophic results that recognized the urgent necessity of seizing upon energetic measures to save Christianity from the cunning of the synagogue of Satan. Unfortunately, this fluctuation in the policy of the Christian hierarchies was in the long run harmful to the church and Christianity. If they had followed without interruption the energetic action directed against Judaism by the fathers of the church, as well as by many popes and councils, pope means papa, then perhaps in time the threat of Jewish imperialism, which at present threatens to overwhelm everything, would have been banished. Chapter 11. Hey, 11. The Third Council of Toledo removes the Jews from public offices. Very wise. With the conversion of the Visigoth king Ricared from Arianism to Catholicism, the sect of the Jew Arius, remember him, received a decisive blow, since, as already stated, the Visigoth Empire was the bastion of the heresy. At that time, tragic memories and wounds opened by the bloody persecution unleashed by the Arian Leo Vigild, I think that's how you say it, Leo Vigild, against the Catholics were still felt. In this persecution, the Jews had participated in a cruel way, so that in Gothic Spain, there was a widespread resentment of Catholic people against the Congregation of Israel. You mean the Jews. They're not Israel. It is understandable, therefore, that after the Visigoth princes had abjured the Arian heresy and adopted Catholicism, a series of corresponding measures were seized upon in order to command a halt to the dominating expansion of Jewry. The Judeophile historian Jose Amador de los Rios, you see, they're always involved in all the races. It's amazing. He recognizes this in this respect that, here's the quote, the doors to the public offices stood open to the Jews, the occupying of which they had to thank the Arian kings for. That's not Arian as white, but the ones that believed in the Arius's heresy, right? Okay. Through marriage, they could infiltrate into the Christian family, which considerably improved their position and their wealth, and in the future secured them no small influence within the state. Made dizzy by their prosperity and their power, they had perhaps taken some part in the last and most painful persecution carried out by the Arians against the Catholics during the reign of Leo Vigild. The fear of the Toledo fathers, who knew of the importance of the Catholic triumph and the cause represented by them, was therefore no objectionable and childish suspicion. Inspired by the example of the Illyrian Synod, they set themselves to bridle the Jews, reducing them to impotence against the Christians. Well, we could use some of that today, couldn't we? We really, really could. Among the canons passed by the Third Council of Toledo for this purpose, Canon 14, stands out on account of its importance, which states the following concerning the Jews. No public offices shall be conferred on them by virtue of which they could impose penalties on Christians. You see, do we see that today now? Let's think about that, right? Are Jews in public offices where they can put penalties and impose penalties on Christians and white people? Why, yes, they are. As a matter of fact, they're in too many positions like this. You know, you would think that we would continue these things and we would have known, we learned from this, so we continue in them. But somehow, the Jew turns it around for their advantage and does the very thing at a higher degree than they did before. It's the strangest, craziest thing in the world. You'd think that we would learn by these things. You'd think we would know this and say, oh, we're not going to let that happen again. We know what happened last time. And yet we do let it happen again, and look at it now. It's in such a bad state. The book continues. The statute of the Catholic Church has its complete justification, since the Jews always misuse the government posts that they acquire within peoples, nations, who have offered them hospitality in order to cause the Christians damage in this or that form. It is completely beyond doubt that if the metropolitans and bishops of the said Toledo Council had lived in our days, they would have been accused of a cruel anti-Jewishism by the Jewish fifth column, which has crept into the Catholic clergy, to say the least. Now, let's equate something. This is 1962 that he's talking, that he is, not the Council of Toledo, but he's talking about today, and that means 1962. Now, I don't think we heard of any child touchers. I don't know exactly when the first priest child touchers were heard of, right? But it certainly, I don't even think it was in his day. So it's sometime after that. I'm not sure exactly when that started. But since Jewry crept into the Catholic clergy, what should that tell you? Yeah. Same old, same old. The prelates of the Third Council of Toledo likewise ordained that if Christians have become polluted with the Jewish rite or circumcision, the former should be reinstated without any kind of reprisal into a position of freedom and in the Christian religion. That's strange. If Christians have become polluted with the Jewish rite or circumcision, the former should be reinstated without any kind of reprisal into a position of freedom and in the Christian religion. That doesn't make sense to me. The aforementioned historian J. Amador de los Rios, the Jew, commenting upon another anti-Jewish statutes of the Holy Council, says the following. In recommending these repressive measures to Ricard as a principal point and one major importance, the Council Fathers were seeking to follow the intentions of the Council of Elvira, denying the Jews any alliance and mixing with the Hispanic Latin race. Just as with the Visigothic people previously, and for a long time afterwards, mixing was not permitted to the peoples ruled by them. Interesting, huh? They've mixed with all the races, but you know that down in South America, it's heavily mixed with Jew blood. And the articles keep coming out about it, stories keep coming, confirmations keep coming out about it. And it seems that it's everywhere. Everywhere we look, they've mixed. Because they have to, right? Among the statutes passed by the said Toledo Council were found those that refused the Jews the right to buy Christian slaves. They agreed perfectly with the statutes passed by this Pope St. Gregory the Great. This pope not only violently opposed the forcible conversions of Jews and any kind of oppression that could force them to convert as false Christians, but decisively forbade them to buy Christian slaves. So obviously, what is this telling you? That Christian slaves existed. Are they to get any reparations? Yeah, I didn't think so. He also energetically combated every manifestation of clandestine Judaism practiced by those who pass themselves off in public as Christians. In this respect, the Jewish historian Gretz quotes a very interesting case writing about Pope St. Gregory. He says, having learned that a certain Jew named Nassus had erected an altar in Elijah, probably a well-known synagogue under that name, on the island of Sicily, hello, Italians, and that Christians were met there to celebrate the divine services, Jewish, Gregory commanded the prefect Libertinus to tear down the building and to impose corporal punishment on Nassus for this offense. Very interesting that the name Nassus has NASA right in it, NASA. Gregory ruthlessly persecuted the Jews who bought Christian slaves or possessed them. In the empire of the Franks, where fanaticism had still not taken root, there was no ban forbidding the Jews to take part in the slave trade. Indignant at this, Gregory wrote to King Theodoric, which is Dietrich, of Burgundy, King Theodobert of Austrasia, and likewise to Queen Brunhilde, whereby he gave expression to his astonishment that they allowed the Jews the possession of Christian slaves. With great zeal, he admonished them to alter this evil state and to liberate the true believers from the violence of their foes. The Visigoth king Ricard, who had subjected himself to the Holy See, was flattered by Gregory in such grand style that he promulgated an edict of intolerance. One sees from this that the measures of restraining the Jews that were approved by the Visigoth Ricard were, according to the Jew Gretz, inspired no less than Pope St. Gregory by St. Gregory the Great, who attempted for a long time in vain to gain the Jews through kindness and tolerance. It is likewise interesting to note that Pope St. Gregory the Great, whilst rejecting forced conversions, cherished the hope of evangelizing the Jews by peaceful means. Although he knew that in general the conversions were feigned and insincere, he hoped at least that the children of the conversos might be sincerely rooted in Christianity. In this respect, our Jewish historian clearly states concerning St. Gregory, quote, however, he was not deceived into thinking that converts obtained in this way were loyal Christians, but he reckoned upon their descendants. If we do not gain them, then we will at least gain their sons. As our writer said, and it is highly worthy of note, even Pope St. Gregory the Great, of such illustrious memory, Yeah. In the history of the church, knew that the conversions of the Jews to Christianity were insincere, and what he aimed at with them was to win over their already Christian-educated sons. Unfortunately, the malice and perfidy of Jewry always causes the most apparently logical calculations to fail. As we have already seen in Chapter 2 of Part 4, the Jewish historian Cecil Roth confirms that Maronism, you know, Maranos, swine, i.e. clandestine Judaism, is characterized by the transmission by parents to children of the secret Jewish religion, hidden under the appearances of a Christianity practiced in public by the Maranos. For this reason, the calculations of all the hierarchies of the church and of the Christian states, based on the idea that even if the conversions are pretended and false, one could nevertheless convert the descendants of the conversos into good Christians, have failed lamentably throughout the centuries, as we shall analyze further in good time. See, it's like putting your hope in something that just can't be. This is why Yeshua did what he did. He taught in parables. He knew they were the children of the devil. He knew who Cain was. And he knew that the progeny of Cain was going to be the same as Cain, and worse in many cases. And so when he came into the flesh body and did his ministry, he didn't waste his time hoping that the Jews would get converted. The Jews, they just don't, you know, it's not, the devil is the devil, and his children are the children of the devil, and the children of the devil are the children of the devil, period. That's it. It's just the way it is. Chapter 12, we're on page 260. The Fourth Toledo Council declares the bishops and clergy supporting the Jews to be blasphemers and excommunicates them. Very good, very good. Well, one of the principal reasons for the slow but constant triumph of Jewish imperialism in the last 1900 years has been the short memory of Christians as well as pagans, who were always inclined to forget the past and did not take into consideration that history is the instructor of life. Now that is the truth. The Jews were always able to gain control of the government offices and obtain great influence within Christian society. If they were successful by application of their indescribable skill in deceiving their neighbors, in attaining the confidence of Christian potentates, whether churchly or worldly. This so greatly desired power was used by them in order to cause harm to those of generous heart who had opened the door and gates to them, since now they conspired with greater prospect of success against the Holy Church, or the Christian states. Thus we see that once Ricard had died, and the motives had been forgotten which justified the exclusion of Jews from public offices, the latter, the Jews, were again permitted to exercise these, and they were permitted to fall back again into their wicked practices, which had brought about the just punitive measures of the Third Toledo Council. Well, let me stop again. Fall back into. You see, when we're watching them and we're keeping a good eye on them, they play the game. There's lots of smiles. There's lots of, yes, we'll take care of this. We'll do this. We'll do. But as soon as the eye is taken off of them, they immediately revert. This tells you they're not of the Father in heaven. Number one, they don't have any mercy. Number two, they're not good. Number three, they have this propensity of evil because of their father and who they are. They're the children of the serpent. Number four, my saying is, there's no such thing as a good Jew. Even a dead Jew is not a good Jew. You must realize, now there's some people that are mixed with Jews that somehow the mix that they're mixed with can have a say in the matter, let's say, but generally speaking, when one mixes with another race, you notice that the blacks almost always side with the darker side. You see, it's just the way it is. So, we're continuing here. In this manner, they represented a grave problem in the Gothic kingdom. When therefore in the year 612, Sisebutus was elected through the votes of the Visigoth potentates and with approval of the episcopate, he first attempted to call a halt to the abuses of the Jews by putting into effect the canon of the Third Toledo Council, which, because of neglect or yielding by the previous government, was no longer practiced, and by likewise most energetically refusing the Jews the right of being able to buy Christian slaves. J. Amador de los Rios confirms the Jew as follows. Sisebutus, firm in his efforts to separate the Jewish race from the Christian, by his removing every power of the former over the latter, commanded that the crown should permit him the return of all incomes, gains, or presents which they had accumulated through deceiving the kings before him. The historian in question reveals that Sisebutus, with his zeal to put into application the statutes of Ricared in their entire extent, gained for himself the approval of the episcopate and the applause of Catholics, and conversely, the tenacious opposition of the Jews, who already showed the hard attributes of Jewish infamy. Finally, Sisebutus resolved to grasp the evil by its roots and to remove from the Imperium this community of disgraceful aliens. You know, today I talked about, I don't really mention anything to do with aliens. I was writing this to a woman from Germany, and I said I don't mix the alien movement with the truth movement, and it goes for this kind of alien too. You know what I mean? It's incredible. They're aliens in our land, but they want you to say, oh no, they're part of us. They're just as much American as you or me or mom's apple pie. Sure they are. Sure they are. So, he says, finally, Sisebutus resolved to grasp the evil by its roots and to remove from the Imperium this community of disgraceful aliens who left in peace neither the Visigoth nation nor the Hispanic Latin believers, and hence represented a lasting threat for the church and state. He therefore announced a fulminant edict, which uttered the expulsion of all members of the Jewish race from the kingdom. However, he committed the cardinal blunder of excluding from this statute those who confessed to Catholicism, so that the majority preferred to remain and allowed themselves to be baptized. As the Jewish historian Cecil Roth has reported, such conversions were pretended and consequently only served to replace Judaism practiced in public as their religion by one cultivated in secret, as the result of which strengthened the fifth column, grew up, which represented a much more dangerous organization than that of open Jewry. And of course, you know, let me add this, right? Of course, that's one of the reasons secret societies bloomed. Make sense? The Jesuit historian Mariana says, when he speaks about this general conversion of Iberian Jews, that a great number of Jews had themselves baptized with proclamation of this decree, of which some were conversions from conviction and the majority hypocritical. Let me stop right there. What did I tell you one of the marks of the Jew is? Well, I mean, Yeshua, Jesus told you. They're hypocrites. Another mark of they're liars. And there's many marks, you know, their nose, but, you know, these are marks that are personality traits, two-facedness, et cetera, et cetera. Here again, what is he just saying? He said that some of these conversions were from conviction and the majority were hypocritical. Mariana further elaborates that the Jews who received water of baptism in order to evade the edict of Sisibitus followed anew with great zeal the confession of belief of their elders upon the latter's death in the year 621. The faulty memory of Christian rulers, which has been so grave, now let's stop right there. You see, this is something that the Jew uses as a weapon against us, is our memory. Why? I suppose that we don't have as good of a memory, and this is just something I'm thinking about at the moment, is because we don't hold grudges, and we don't... See, the Jews know a lot about history because they have a lot of grudges against us, and they never let them go. But we're not a people that wants to remember any grudges or any of that kind of stuff. And that's probably why we're that way. But see, knowing that we're that way, the Jew takes advantage of us. See, that's why we're, you know, somebody told us don't be interested in history. Live for today. The faulty memory of Christian rulers, which has been so grave in its consequences and of such advantage for the Jews, brought with it the fact that Christians and pagans in the course of history forgot the lessons of the past and fell into the old faults of wishing to bring the terrible Jewish problem towards a solution through conversion. Let me just stop there. I mean, you see, Jesus taught us this. That's what I keep telling you. So there is no excuse why we should entertain any such thing of converting Jews. Do you realize that if we just listen to Jesus Christ, or Yeshua, the Father in the flesh, you realize how much pain and how many people and all kinds of things that wouldn't have come to harm? If we could just understand that the Jew cannot be converted and that it's a complete waste of time. See, if you can't beat them, join them, right? But when the Jew thinks of something like that, they join them to beat them. They join them so that they can infiltrate and destroy them from the inside. Remember the Russian fellow came over here and he said about destroying America from the inside? You see, that's a very Jewish thing. See, we as Anglo-Saxon people, we're not looking to destroy everything. We're not looking to, but somebody's helping us to do these things. You see? You know, when there was a king, I told you this before, like John Dee was the magical practitioner. You know how you saw the king and then you'd see a fellow in a long robe with a long hat on and he'd have moon and stars on them. He was a seer. There's your typical Jew. Now, I can't say if John Dee was a Jew, but he certainly fit the parameters. You know, Enochian magic and all that kind of stuff. So, it's just something to think about. This is the problem. Imagine you make your advisors. This is what David did. He allowed Jewish scribes to come in and work on our Bible and our scriptures, and they got jealous when they found out about our covenant and all these things, and they decided to subvert it some more, you know? And, you know, it just continued from there. This is what they always do. This goes on. And, you know, it doesn't stop today. It's the same old song and dance. It's the same thing. So let's continue. The expulsion of all Jews from the Gothic kingdom would have signified a solution of the problem. If it had been carried out totally, and the possibilities had not been made clear for the Jews to retain a loophole through their apparent conversions. In other words, to pretend I have converted, you know, as a Jew. If they converted, they were allowed to stay. See, this is the loophole he's talking about, and this is the mistake. The problem is that the Father wants them among us for the tests, unfortunately. The purpose of the test, but they're not to rule over us. You know, we are in the time of Jacob's trouble, I believe, as many do. But they're not supposed to have this kind of control over us that they have at this point. I mean, this is, they may live among us to test us a bit, but it's not supposed to be like this. So, the expulsion would have been justified on the other side, for the owners of a house have always had the right to show a guest the door, who, far removed from giving thanks for their hospitality enjoyed, sets himself to rob his hosts of their property or to cause them difficulties. See, that's exactly what it is, right? They have been given the hospitality. You know, they came crying on the doorstep, as they always do, and please let us in. We're a persecuted people. All this stuff, right? Then pretty soon, they get in our house and they're robbing us and stealing our properties and causing us difficulties. And then when we call them on it, they say, oh, that's anti-Jewishism. Doesn't anybody see that? The commentary which the Jew Gretz makes, referring to the expulsion edict of Sisebutus, is characteristic in this respect, when he says that Sisebutus, by means of this fanatical persecution, cleared the way for the dissolution of the Visigoth kingdom. Undoubtedly, he here refers to the fact that the complicity of the Jews favored the triumph of the Mohammedan invaders. Do you see any pattern there? The Mohammedan invaders. Do we see any Mohammedan invaders today? The fact is that the Jews had not ceased since the conversion of the Visigoths to Catholicism and their abjuration of Arianism, the heresy, to conspire against the new position of things. If there existed a fault on the part of Sisebutus or his successors, then it was that of not expelling completely the conspiratorial aliens who had infiltrated into the land, which in fact favored from within outwards the Arabic conquest. We see the Arabic conquest in our countries today, do we? We saw it in the Byzantine Empire, did we not? We saw it when the Jews helped open the gates of Babylon, did we not? And so on, and so on, and so on, and so on. As we've seen through this book, by the way, as well, we've seen how the Jews have been against the kingdom of Rome and the church from the beginning. They never stop being against because they know they're in a war with us. It's us who don't know that we're in a war with them, even to this very moment. It's just a very interesting how this same thing goes over and over and over again. So it continues. Without Jews on Gothic soil, this service of espionage would not have been able to be performed, and the handing over of fortified places as well as the desertion of troops in the army of Roderick would not have been able to be effected, as the Jews were successful in doing. It was the fault of the Goths that the possibility was left open to the Jewish Fifth Column by means of a pretense of a false conversion to remain further on their soil, for it is always dangerous to allow the activity of any kind of Fifth Column. It's very important to establish that Sisebutus was certainly conscious of the lack of strength on the part of the Christians, of pursuing throughout history a firm policy towards their enemies, as well as a faulty memory of the peoples in relation to the lessons of the past. Well, I mean, of course it would be hard to do with the Catholic Church being Pauline and with the Pauline gospel. Of course it made it very hard, because everybody could be converted in the Pauline gospel. But that's not so in the gospel of Jesus Christ, the gospel of the kingdom of God. Not so at all. You see, this has caused a lot of trouble throughout the ages. And you see that even in this time, Christianity was weakening. It had times of strength, but it kept weakening because they thought you could, a Jew could be saved. They didn't know about the war, the two seed line message. They didn't know about that the Jews are of their father, the devil, even though they had it right in Scripture. I mean, he knew about it here, kind of in this book, but they never act upon it. They don't understand it. They think you can still convert Jews. Tex Mars thought you could convert Jews. Yet he knew Jews were the biggest enemy, right? It's the same precept. So, let's continue here. That it was through this firm policy towards their enemies, as well as the faulty memory of the peoples in relation to the lessons of the past. Therefore, he did everything, this is Sisebutus, humanly possible to prevent his successes falling into the traps of the skilled deceptive maneuvers on the part of cunning Jewish diplomacy and renouncing the laws which he had enacted for the defense of the church and of the state. The legislation created by him for this purpose, which was incorporated into the Furo Juzgo, was impressed upon the hearts of his successors by Sisebutus himself, so that the latter applied all strictness in the following of the anti-Jewish laws, with the punishment of seeing themselves deprived of rights for lifetime, as well as with death, to be thrust out of the host of believers in Christ and cast among the Jews, so that the raging flames of hell lick them eternally. Well, you see, when I say that the Father wants these people here to, because it's part of the test, like I say, they're meant to be kept at bay. In other words, they're meant to not be able to hold certain positions in our society and where to keep separate from them, even though they're in our society. It's all about the test, ladies and gentlemen. It really is. And Sisebutus, who well knew the chronic faults of the Christian dignitaries, did not err in this. Scarcely he was dead than the new king, Swintilla, soon fell a victim to the smooth diplomacy of the Jews, who have the special gift of injecting confidence in their future victims by their lulling them through an extremely hearty treatment and hypocritically pretending to show a friendship and loyalty which covers their black plans and allows them to appear as victims of the most disgraceful injustices. I think we need to put on our listening and find out what happened to this king once again. I want you to listen and pay attention to this technique of the Jews, because this is another pattern used over and over and over and over and over and over again. King Swintilla soon fell victim to the smooth diplomacy of the Jews, who have the special gift of injecting confidence in their future victims by their lulling them through an extremely hardy treatment and hypocritically pretending to show a friendship and loyalty. I remember this with the Duke there from Germany in Judge Seuss, the movie. Same exact deal. To the T. Which covers their black plans and allows them to appear as victims of the most disgraceful injustices. You see, that's anti-Jewishism. They've got everybody conned that they're their friends. And then they've got this thing where they're the victims of these anti-Jewishism happenings, which they've caused. With their classical methods of deception, they were successful in winning Swintilla for themselves, who disregarded the admonitions of Sisebutus to his successors not to alter the anti-Jewish laws for the defense of the kingdom, and who did not know how to cast his curse against those who disavowed the said laws. He lifted the entire anti-Jewish legislation, and with it the edict of expulsion of the Jews, so that the untrue converts, if they wished, could again publicly practice their Jewish cult, as well as return to the land from which they had been driven out. Mistakes we make over and over and over and over again, and the Jew wins, and the Jew wins, and the Jew wins. The Jew Gretz, who is better acquainted in the internal matters of Jewry than Father Mariana, says in this connection the following. Quote, in spite of baptism, the converted Jews had not given up their religion. You know it's not a religion, but whatever. He thus does not make Mariana's allusion that, although the majority pretended conversion, there were nevertheless some who did it from inner conviction. On the other hand, Gretz further elaborates that in the epoch of the Semitophile Swintilla, the act of baptism was regarded as sufficient, and none bothered to make inquiry as to whether the converts retained their old habits and practices. In other words, they didn't keep a watchful eye over them, which you know what that means. They revert right back to the swill, the vomit. The noble king Swintilla was naturally dethroned through a conspiracy of the nobility and clergy, who place Sisenand in his place, who was a willing tool of theirs. Here the Jew Gretz mentions a condition which represents the ideal for the false converts from Jewry, and which consists in that they already transform themselves into true Christians through baptism, without anyone bothering to investigate whether the converts and their descendants still adhered in secret to the Jewish cult. This is exactly the situation today of the descendants of the false converts, who enjoy freedom of action as powerful as a powerful fifth column within the church, and cause Christianity colossal harm without anyone setting up a real investigation in order to establish who practices Judaism in secret. That's where we're going to stop, ladies and gentlemen. We're on page 264. You know, I hope you're listening to these shows several times, and I hope you're able to keep your memory in tune with what's going on. You know, here's how I would say this, by the way, so you'll know. Some things you just let filter through your mind. They're not worthy of retaining. Other things you bullet point so that you remember them, because they are worth retaining. And the mind can only remember so much, too, I think, anyway. You know, I always give a good piece of advice at the end of every Rabbit Hole radio show, and that is, don't go down the wrong hole.
They bring disgrace. A man without a face. The sands of time, they pass again. It's so hard to tell where and when. Yet just do the best you can. Lines that they told erased. A man without a face. A man without a face. A man without a face. A man without.